Coming up on Tech News Today, thousands put down money for a Tesla they've never seen. What do they know that we don't? Also, this may be the last Final Four where you can win real money online. And Tinder for enterprise? Tech News Today is next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1482, recorded Thursday, March 31st, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at freshbooks.com/TNT.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com and enter promo code TNT for 30% off your entire order.
Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. I am Becky Worley, filling in for the ever-jovial Megan Maroney and Jason Howell. Today, this show is regressing, but in a good way. I am joined by Tom Merritt of Daily Tech News Show. Tom, we started this thing a while back, maybe 2010.
Ooh, we're doing the flashback episode.
Way back machine. What was the date? You knew it exactly.
June 1st. Well, because it's June 1st. It was easy to remember.
Right. So we got our glasses, you know, Tom's got a little...
Our eyesight is shot.
I know, Tom's got a little gray in the beard. Six years later, we're still standing, though.
I remember, Becky.
All right, well, the best way to commemorate our 6 years of not working together is to jump right into the tech stories of the day. So let's go with Nest. The smart thermostat is feeling a little chilly. Sources told Recode that it reported $340 million in gross revenue for 2015, underperforming the goal set for it by Alphabet, its parent company. So let's recap. Then Google, now Alphabet, bought Nest in 2014 for $3.2 billion. They'd hoped that Nest would sell $500 million worth of products by 2015. But according to Recode, Nest's future at Google is at risk. So is this a sign that the smart home Internet of Things is not taking off at the pace we expected, Tom?
You know, I don't know that it is. It's definitely a sign that Tony Fadell may not be a perfect culture fit over there at Alphabet. And it seems from other things that I'm reading, too, that since Alphabet performed the little judo move of spinning Google out into its own company so that its bottom line looked better, all of a sudden, these other divisions like Nest realized that they had to start being fiscally responsible. And I think that's chafing a lot of people who sort of were able to live the good life when their budgets were just kind of lost among the Google budget.
Yeah, it was interesting that the conclusion from all of the financial information that was coming out is that revenue from the companies that aren't called Google are $448 million, and that's primarily Verily, Nest, and Fiber. So that's less than people thought. You know, it's 8% of the Alphabet workforce is these other bets. You know, kind of $500 million basically is what they're creating every year. Google, on the other hand, $74.5 billion. You would think that Google, the parent here, would be a little bit more willing to shell out some leeway for them. I mean, are these bets that you think they'll stay with them, or you think they'll start shaking the tree and changing the management?
Well, and I should mention that my wife actually works for YouTube, obviously part of Google as well. I don't have any inside knowledge because of that. But I do think that maybe these sorts of stories like to make a good headline. And so I wonder, is Nest really in danger? Because if Nest was a startup doing this, I don't think anybody would be blinking an eye. They'd be looking at them and say, you guys are doing great. Or is it because Alphabet has changed these things that they're having some serious conversations saying, look, you guys got to put the pedal to the metal, however, whatever order you do that in, and make some money. And that doesn't mean they're in trouble necessarily. Now, some of these other divisions may be a little more in trouble, may need to show some more results. There have definitely been some rumblings in Verily and a few of the other research departments that they don't like the fact that they have to show some kind of fiscal progress now, where in the olden days, they could just sort of pie in the sky. But I feel like Nest is probably still a really good bet. And I can't imagine Alphabet would kick it to the curb when it's just riding the initial wave of that smart home Internet of Things trend.
Ken from Chicago in the chat room says what I was thinking. It may just be a sign that people don't want to pay $200, $250, whatever the price is du jour for a thermostat. The upgrade to smart elements is definitely an increase in investment for the homeowner. And it's kind of naive to think that there's just going to be a whole hog adoption of all of these products. It's more like you think about the way that you change out things in your house. It's as they need to be replaced. So that's a long tail for a lot of these companies that may need to start maturing into profitable companies past the sort of I always think of it as like your childhood. The startup days are sort of crazy, and yet at the same time, you don't have a lot of responsibilities. And as these companies mature, take on more funding, they go through painful adolescence, and maybe that's what we're looking at right now. And then they either die in a car crash or they live to become responsible adults. It's like the most
sadly put, but true. But yeah, I think you nailed it. I think Nest is having that conversation with its parents, Larry and Sergey, right now. and you know what Nest should be doing is they should be out there. They're sort of been riding the wave of like, hey, we're cool Nest. Kind of, we've got the Apple vibe because Tony Fadell used to work at Apple. What they need to be doing is going and marketing the Nest as it pays for itself. Sure, it's $200, $300, but let's show you how it's going to, you know, cut down your energy bill. That's the message they should be out there pushing to convince people. Because, yeah, otherwise, everybody looks at it and goes, well, why would I pay $300 to replace my perfectly good thermostat?
Today, it's Tesla Day. The company started taking pre-orders, but bizarrely, they're not unveiling the car until 11:30 p.m. Eastern time, even though they've been taking pre-orders all day, people putting down $1,000 to get a chance to get the Model 3. It starts at $35,000 minus up to $10,000 in incentives, depending on where you live. Some say this is the car that the entire company's future is built on, electric for the masses. So let's get into the rumors. 225-mile range per charge, and maybe the most intriguing thing, what will it look like? So according to EV blog Electric, CEO Elon Musk is intensely driving the engineering. He wants designers to deliver a drag coefficient lower than 0.20, which they say would make it the lowest of any mass production car in the world, close to extreme vehicles like GM's EV1, Volkswagen's XL1. Both of those cars have flat rear wheel covers. Achieving drag coefficients in that range, they say, can result in unconventional, maybe ugly designs. So, Tom, is Elon Musk going to bet the farm on something ugly?
Apparently, it doesn't matter, right? People are still throwing down their $1,000 sight unseen. It is, I think, telling that on the day a new iPhone is out, there are no lines for the new iPhone, albeit a smaller bargain iPhone, and there are lines for a $35,000 car. I giggle a little about it being called a car for the masses when it's $35,000. I personally have never spent $35,000 on a car, even borrowed $35,000 to buy a car. But I get it. With the $10,000 incentive, it brings it down to $25,000, which at least is near the average of what people pay for cars. There is the reality distortion field around what Elon Musk does. I have a feeling it doesn't matter what it looks like.
Despite the fact that oil has been hovering near all-time lows all year, gas prices mirroring that, it is really incredible that the interest is so high, and he is definitely got the superstar CEO marketing going for him in a big way. You mentioned the folks camping out. It really is a phenomenon that's been going around. You see lots of pictures online. And apparently Elon tweeted that there's a special treat for those who waited in line. I don't know.
A signed photo of Elon Musk.
Lucky you. Woo! I don't know. I think it's cool. I'm just, maybe it's just the environmentalist in me that people are this excited about an electric car. As you said, sight unseen, no specs. Also, how weird is it that they would have a press event at 11:30 at night Eastern?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the, I mean, it's still 8:30 Pacific, I guess, but is that to get it in prime time? But it's going to miss all the time on the East Coast.
I've never heard of anything like that. That is just bizarre.
Maybe it's to make people like us talk about it longer because we wonder why he's doing it.
What are you up to, dude? I think that's, yeah, seriously. That could be like the ultimate caption contest around Elon Musk. What are you up to, dude? All right, let's do a quick lightning round of virtual reality / mixed reality news. Then we'll discuss after. So yesterday, Microsoft began shipping their HoloLens developer's kit at a cost of $3,000. Today, they realized, holo crap, that's a lot of money. They unveiled an emulator so developers can make apps for HoloLens without shelling out $3,000. According to VentureBeat, the emulator uses a Hyper-V virtual machine, works with Visual Studio. The inputs that are usually read by the visor sensors, instead they're simulated using your keyboard, your mouse, or your Xbox controller. Meanwhile, over at iFixit, the inevitable teardown of the just-released Oculus Rift, they started the teardown with the important question, can we put it down long enough to actually take it apart? They did. So they started by comparing this consumer release to some of the prototypes builds. From the past, the biggest differences were the use of dual custom OLED panels instead of the previous single panel display, which was the same one that Samsung used in the Note 3. Instead of interchangeable lenses, it now has Fresnel lenses, saying the Fresnel lens yields the same large viewing angle and short focal length, but with a fraction of the material. They do the same job as the thick, bulging, curved plastic lenses seen in prior Rifts using thin arrays of concentric prisms that weigh far less. All right. So VR, mixed reality, virtual reality, HoloLens, Oculus Rift. Tom, where are you sitting on this?
Yeah, I think the reason Microsoft is doing the emulator is more for the fact that these $3,000 kits are for companies to buy or even small teams to buy, and that the emulator allows more people to work on it at once, since you probably can only going to get one or two of these. I think that the Rift looks great. The pixels per inch is, I think, 461, which is more than an iPhone 6 Plus, but less than a Samsung Galaxy S7. Which is used in a Gear VR. So I think it's interesting that you've actually got a lower pixels per inch than a Gear VR, but because of those Fresnel lenses, because of the construction of it, I think it's going to have a superior, I think it definitely, people are already saying it has a superior view. And you've got a whole system with dual lenses and everything too. So I think this is all really interesting. I'm still curious what people will use VR for. I don't think it will be a flop. I don't think it will end up, you know, being something that all of them go away. But I wonder whether it will be gaming that sustains it or whether there'll be some other use for it. I tried out the HTC Vive over the weekend for the first time. And the thing that struck me about it was not how good it looked, which it did. The head tracking was great and everything, but how comfortable it was on the head. And that's one thing that a lot of people say is this thing better be comfortable for me to be able to sit there and watch a movie or play a game in it for a few hours.
You buy in the philosophy that HoloLens is for enterprise and everything else is for consumer?
Not really. I think HoloLens will have a lot more enterprise-level experiences. But honestly, I've had a lot of folks who work in engineering design, a guy that works up in the Alaska pipeline, right into DTNS, saying that, you know, they're going to use VR for this so they can do virtual walkthroughs because that works great. They don't need to be on site. Sometimes they can't be on site. And so virtual reality headsets work better because they can actually pretend to be on site without having to be there. That said, augmented reality like HoloLens has some great applications because you can look at something real. I think that's got more possibilities. And part of the reason, and I've said this before in other shows, is you can do VR with an augmented reality headset. You just block out you block out everything in the view, right? You can't really do augmented reality as easily. The HTC Vive has a way of doing it, but it's certainly not as natural as doing it with the augmented reality headset where your vision is naturally clear. I can't wait for Magic Leap to get in here and show us what they've been cooking for years now.
I keep going back to an experience I had at Tech TV, which was at this bizarre police and, you know, like the FBI and the CIA, all of these law enforcement agencies, that they had their big convention down in Long Beach, I think it was. And one of the companies that was selling something, this was 15 years ago, it was a 360-degree projector, and you stood in the middle with a sort of a laser gun and basically had to make decisions about when to shoot and when not to shoot. It was not a game. It was an incredibly realistic simulation. And I, to this day, that visual has stuck with me and informed some of my thinking around anytime I hear around someone who's, you know, an officer-involved shooting. And I just think how that visual medium can really affect people emotionally and in terms of their thinking. And the learning opportunity is insane when you think about on-the-job training. So I love that image of the Alaska pipeline and thinking about all the different ways people could develop really useful applications for this that go beyond gaming. Even though gaming's cool too, it's just, I'm curious whether it's going to be enough of an incentive to really have a huge adoption curve straight out of the gates. I think it's going to be a longer tail. So
yeah, I think it's going to be a slow ramp, a long ski slope too. I was talking to a guy at a meetup the other weekend who was talking about him working in the military on a similar thing that you're describing. It was a big installation in a room. And he was like, now we just spent $500 and we have the same thing. It's insane.
Yeah, that thing was like 150 grand. So yeah, I think it makes sense. It's so much more to scale. All right, stick with us through the break. When we come back, skeptical Tom and policy-loving me. Thanks, it's a cage match over desktop power draw standards. Yeah, pretty exciting stuff. How much energy does your computer take? But first, let's take a second to thank our sponsor.
Thanks, Becky. Let's take a minute to thank FreshBooks, the sponsor of this episode. It is nearing tax time. It is right around the corner. But if you are a freelancer or if you run a small business, it probably always feels like it's nearing tax time. You got into this job for the freedom of it, but there's no freedom in those stacks of receipts and spreadsheet formatting nightmares. Those were not part of your dream job scenario. You maybe need a robot to help you, or you could use FreshBooks. Our friends at FreshBooks have created easy-to-use cloud accounting software that makes dealing with your taxes way less taxing. You can get started with FreshBooks. It could not be easier, even if you're not a numbers person. You can create and send invoices with so much efficiency, you won't believe it. Plus, you get paid online quickly with FreshBooks payments. You also have the option to request a deposit in FreshBooks, and you get paid up front. No more covering costs out of pocket or waiting until the end of a project to get paid. FreshBooks has also made it incredibly easy for you to track all your billable time. FreshBooks also recently announced their new EMV chip card reader. I have it right here. It's really cute. Fits in your pocket. And then you can get paid. They can swipe the swipe or dip the chip. Either one, it works. The card reader is already really popular with IT professionals. You know, the folks that will go to your house and fix all your tech. Your clients will have no more excuses not to pay you. Whatever you do, you can take their credit card on the spot. You can easily accept credit cards wherever business takes you, quickly and securely, with their entirely redesigned iPhone app. Plus, create beautiful invoices in just seconds. With FreshBooks, you can focus on what you love most, growing your business. You will wonder why you didn't start with FreshBooks sooner. Getting started is simple. It's totally free for 30 days. Go to FreshBooks.com/TNT and don't forget to enter Tech News Today in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Start your 30-day free trial today, and we thank FreshBooks for supporting this episode of Tech News Today.
Hey, welcome back to Tech News Today. I am Becky Worley, filling in for Megan Maroney and Jason Howell. The California Energy Commission today released its latest proposal for mandating more energy-efficient computers and monitors. The proposed standards require that desktop computers reduce power draw by half when idle. And they establish more modest power reductions for notebooks and laptops, which already are more efficient when they're operating on battery mode, but that's not always the case when they're plugged in. The Energy Commission says the initiatives would save California more than $400 million annually, and if adopted nationwide, save $2.2 billion. The Energy Commission will issue a final proposal and hopes to adopt the standards by the end of 2016. I've done a couple documentaries on green technology and what leads to efficiencies and innovation, and it always seems to come back to policy, Tom. These big overarching standards that are laid down by the government, and they seem to have an impact, and California has a wide reach.
Yeah, and in fact, Europe's standards are quoted in the study here, saying Europe has new more exacting standards that will happen, and that will cause manufacturers to have to make more energy efficient computers. But we don't think it goes far enough in California, so they're proposing these stricter standards. These were released back on March 12th, actually, and there's a workshop scheduled for April 15th. So anybody who thinks they have an opinion about this and lives in California should probably file their public comments. The California Energy Commission did talk to stakeholders. They did talk to manufacturers. They did talk to tech companies. I think what worries me about this, and this is always the problem with these kinds of regulations, are the loopholes and the unintended consequences. So, for instance, in this proposal, it says that workstations only have to replace the power supply. The 80 plus power supply is required for workstations, which will save some energy for sure. But I know that immediately a large number of enterprises are going to claim that their PCs and desktops are in fact workstations. It says in the proposal, and I'm sure there's a stricter definition in the actual rules, but it says in the proposal that workstations are task-specific things like film editing stations. It's like, well, a film editing station is just a desktop computer these days. So I feel like there's a big loophole there. I do think that it's great to give manufacturers some incentive, especially if you've brought them in. I like better than putting these rules down, funding better research to make this happen. So the state is actually, as part of this program, giving $2 million to Agios to develop software-defined power management. They're also giving money to the University of California, Irvine, to help reduce energy use in computers. And that, I think, has got a better chance of improving things. And maybe you need the rules, too. Maybe you need a little carrot and stick. But if you can have better technology out there for companies to use, then you're more likely to be able to say, oh, well, I'm going to get that computer because it's going to use less power, and that's important to me. And then the rules kind of keep the bad actors from abusing the system.
You would think that incentive was already in play in that big corporate enterprise is spending so much of their budget on energy costs, and that they would do that already. And that's where you hope that the free markets can do as much as they can to take the low hanging fruit. But then at a certain point, you got to squeeze down from the top on the restrictions and the policies. And for those of you who are wondering why these California laws matter so much, it's that California in the past, when it comes to our Air Resources Board and other state agencies, have mandated certain efficiency standards with emission standards. They brought in the smog check way back when. They were the first to limit lead in gasoline. And because California has such a huge reach in the country, that any company that wants to do business in California, it's actually more economical to sort of put those standards across their whole business so that they comply with California. And that's really how we got a lot of the fuel efficiency standards across the country and the emission standards down. So I know that you're a little more freewheeling and I'm a little bit more wonkish, but I think we can, you can put
I'm not
peanut butter on my chocolate and we're going to be okay here.
Definitely. That sounds delicious. I'm not against policies. I just think that policies often are touted as fixes when they're experiments. A lot of times we don't really know what effect they're going to have, and we don't see all the effects they're going to have. And so that's why I'm looking at this. I'm like, well, every business out there is going to call all their desktops a workstation, replace the power supply, and be done with it. So I'm not sure that this will have the effect that it's intended to have. At the same time, you can't just leave it entirely to the free market. For instance, the Energy Star version 7 standards for monitors are out there, but people aren't making monitors at Energy Star version 7 standard. So what the California Energy Commission is doing here is saying we will make our regulations be Energy Star version 7. So it's basically for monitors. It's saying we'll just make that voluntary standard the law in California.
I have a PTA meeting on the night of that meeting that, you know, where they're taking comments. So can
on
you
April
just,
15th?
Yeah, can you just go for me? Do you
just
mind?
Just give me your comments. I'll take them for you. Yeah.
A question.
I'll get a little printout of your head and be like, this is what she said.
She said, more importantly, Tom, who's your Final Four team? Are you a hoops guy?
You know, I'm not as much of a hoops guy as I used to be. I used to, like, drive to Indianapolis to see NCAA tournament games back in the day. But it's tough this year because I want, you know, Syracuse is the underdog, obviously. And my friend, one of my best friends, is a Sooners fan. But Villanova won the NCAA tournament in 1984. And it was the first time I ever played the NCAA pool as a freshman in high school. I won $64 off Villanova and opened my first checking account. So I kind of have to pull for that.
Well, you know, that's a perfect segue to the news today that the NCAA has reached a deal on this type of gambling that you were engaging in way back when, $64.
But yeah, the coffee can and the strips of paper is a little far from DraftKings and FanDuel. I know.
Yeah, they haven't gone after your coffee can. They've gone after, as you mentioned, DraftKings and FanDuel. They want to exclude college basketball from their sites. The NCAA wants FanDuel and DraftKings to exclude NCAA basketball. So in case you're living under a rock and you've avoided all advertising last year, these guys are unbelievable. They blanket you with ads. These are daily fantasy leagues where you bet real money. The ban for college basketball will start after this year's Final Four tournament. So there is still time for you to put your money on, well, I'm sorry, Tom, on Syracuse. Just for context, football accounts for 10 times the amount of activity that college hoops does. But still, the NCAA wants to avoid that association of even more money changing hands around these unpaid athletes. They do get those T-shirts that say still reppin', though. So, you know, they get that.
We're not taking that away.
No, that's okay.
Does this just apply to basketball?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know the answer.
Are they going to go after football?
I don't know, maybe it's just, I'll have to check. But the question I have is, like, is this hypocrisy from the NCAA? Because Las Vegas takes $150 million. They book that many bets on the Final Four weekend, and the NCAA is not going after them.
Yeah, DraftKings and FanDuel have received a lot of... I don't want to say it's undue, because maybe it is, maybe it's due, but a lot of out of proportion criticism for what they do compared to what other gambling venues on not just in Las Vegas, but Atlantic City and on several boats that are docked off the coast of many cities on many rivers. It's just that they're online that I think makes it feel icky to legislators who maybe aren't conversant with the web and think, well, wait a minute, this is just getting around those online gambling rules that we fought so hard to put in place back in 2000. So I wonder why that they're getting all of the anger directed at them. But I think because of all of that has happened, you now have the NCAA saying, well, people think of them as gambling. And so and it's very popular among our fans and probably even among our athletes. And we don't want to get in a situation where our athletes are playing FanDuel and betting on themselves or their friends. So let's just cut it out. Let's just make sure it doesn't touch us.
I just checked, and LegalSportsReport.com says all college fantasy sports contests will go DraftKings and FanDuel, because it definitely seems like it would apply to all. So
more of that betting on the cross for me.
Again, just go with Syracuse. You can't go wrong.
Right.
Sorry, I'm a Central New York person that I am. If you're from Missouri, who is your home team? Are you a Hoosier by nature?
I'm from Southern Illinois, so Mizzou for a lot of my friends and family, but University of Illinois for me, because that's where I went to college.
Right. Got it. Okay. Well, we can go with that.
They're orange and blue.
Yeah, that's the same. I mean, come on. Orange looks great. TNT's fan of the day. Let's move right on so it doesn't go into a basketball war. Brian J. Murray on Twitter, who sent us this side-by-side picture of Jason and Jonathan Strickland using the app Masquerade to superimpose panda heads on each of them.
Never looked better. Both of them.
Oh, man. Jason's daughters are going to love that he's Kung Fu Panda at work. It also looks a little bit like that napping head thing that Leo sometimes puts on it. You know, have you seen one of those? You go in there, you take a nap. Oh, yeah. Well, Got it.
Well done, bribery.
Yeah. Hey, just show us how you watch or listen to TNT, record a video, take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and Jason and Megan are going to find it. Now, don't stop listening or watching just because we need to pop a little ad into the show now. Mm-mm. When we come back, the newest way to work with the good people in your company. Think swipe right for your next dev partners. Oh, yeah. But first, a word about our sponsor.
Hey, thanks, Becky. So check it out. Let's thank a sponsor of today's episode. This is Tracker, super cool device. It's all about, well, I mean, everything in our lives right now. Like, we're always searching for smart things in our life, our smart home, our smartphone, our smart, you know, smart cars even. But, you know, when you lose things, you feel a lot less than smart. Kind of feel a little dumb, unfortunately. But that's where Tracker kind of comes in to help you out. I know that you've probably experienced this, right? It's time to leave the house. Like, let's say 10 minutes ago you needed to leave. Right as you find, you know, try to find your keys, you realize they're not where you thought you left them. Okay, so now you're really late. You check the kitchen counter. You can't find them. The top of the fridge, maybe the ignition in the car. Check the pockets of all the clothes from the day before. It's incredibly stressful. And, you know, that's the perfect reason. That's the perfect use for Tracker. It makes losing things a thing of the past. It's a coin-sized device, really small. It helps you locate those missing keys. Also, you can go ahead and throw one in your wallet, bags, computers, even your pets. Attach it to your pet's collar in seconds, and you can track them. Pair Tracker to your iOS or Android device, and you can quite literally attach it to anything with the key loop, or you can stick it to it with the adhesive. That'll allow you to find its precise location with a single tap of the button. It's super easy. If you lose your phone, all you have to do is press the button on Tracker and your phone will ring. Even if you have it set to silent so it won't make any noise, it's still going to ring here. The Tracker Bravo is constructed with beautiful anodized aluminum. Really nice, elegant looking. It's the thinnest, most durable tracking. With over 1.5 million devices, Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world. So your lost item actually shows up on a map even when it's miles away. And if an item happens to go missing, which it happens, the Tracker app records its last known location on that map so that when other users are within 100-foot range of your lost item, you'll actually get a GPS update of where that item is. Go to thetracker.com. And never lose your possessions again. Plus, just for our audience, if you enter promo code TNT, you're going to get 30% off your entire order. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT, and you're going to get 30% off your entire Tracker order. Good deal there. We thank Tracker for their support. All right, Becky, it's time to send it back to you.
Jason, after that photo of you and Jonathan Strickland with the panda heads, and we were referencing that nap thing, Jason, our fabulous producer, is demonstrating the ostrich pillow that I was referencing. Thank you so much for that. The gray, weirdly beaded. God, producers are just, they are just the salt of the earth. Thank you, Jason. All things must be demonstrated. So let's talk about coworkers. Jason's mine. Tom, you used to be my favoritest coworker ever.
Yeah, when you were talking about battling around the policy, it kind of reminded me of the old computer shopper segment.
Oh right, remember we had that the boxing ring? Gloves and yeah. The ring. David Spark would go in there. Patrick mm-hmm. Norton. Those were the days, man.
Yeah, good times.
It's almost 20 years. You know, that's ridiculous. 18. But I mean, that's just crazy.
I remember actually when you caught Eileen Rivera and I for the first time right after we started dating at CES and yelled, "You can't go to ZDTV Radio now."
If there's a line in the sand that you shouldn't cross, I'm generally on the front side of it. It's right there behind me. See, but look, it worked out great. You know?
Yeah, everything worked out fine.
See, she didn't want to go to radio anyways.
Well, no, she was at radio. You didn't want me to leave. Call for help.
Oh, right. That's what it was. That's right. I was not going to give you up that easily. Come on, please. Forget about it.
I appreciate that.
I know. You were my work husband in a way that time. And, you know, that's the thing is when you find coworkers that you really like, great. But, you know, it's a little dicey when you get assigned to work with someone on a project. So if you don't have the history that Tom and I have, if there was an app for picking the workmates you want to avoid, you know, just like the deadweight employees who suck the life out of you, and you could pick the ones that you really love and you want to work with them on projects. Is this sounding like a good idea? And what if it was just like Tinder? You swipe left to neg them, and you swipe right to say, oh, hell yeah. Well, today, Atlassian announced Teamder. They say, and I'm quoting here, finding the perfect match for your team has never been easier, whether you're looking for the right long-term fit or you just need someone right now. Anonymously browse coworkers in your office, swipe right if you want them. And then they add, want them on your team. Swipe left if you don't. Now, I must add, Atlassian is a sponsor of the Twit Network, but Tom, I mean, come on. So genius. Also,
is it already?
What is today's date?
It's April 1st already.
Oh. Is that
it's
not?
Like Christmas now. It starts earlier and earlier every year.
Oh, man. So I thought that was going to be a real boon for HR. No more conflict, just left-right swiping, and if there's mutually agreed upon work chemistry.
No disrespect to Atlassian. You know, good, funny concept, good execution. But somewhere in Silicon Valley, there's a startup sitting there going, but that's all right. That's our idea. That's actually our business plan. What are they doing? Why are they making fun of this?
Someone's life was just ruined. Now, this next, perhaps, farcical news story is maybe not something someone's working on. You just got to see the pictures of this Roomba Zumba. It's a new branded Roomba that lets you do Zumba while Roomba does your vacuuming. Just like Zumba has the bright yellow and orange and everyone's doing the Latin beat jazzercise in the background, now Roomba also has that same, ooh, look at that, hot pink, lime green. It's got a little speaker on top, your fabulous instructor who's got all the moves. She is putting the music on top of the Roomba, and it is going all around the room. What do you
think? I have a question.
Just one is the question.
It's just a Roomba, right? But with Zumba colors?
It's the Roomba Zumba. Come on.
So you're just doing Zumba. The Roomba is not all, or is the Roomba also doing Zumba with you?
No, the Roomba facilitates the Zumba.
How?
Because you don't have to vacuum, so you can Zumba.
Oh, it's saving it, but don't all Roombas do that?
Not on April 1st.
they don't all rhyme with Roomba. Yeah, okay.
No, now you're never going to be able to say Roomba without accidentally saying Zumba.
It's just going to get worse until late tomorrow, isn't it?
I can only imagine what is coming.
You know, there are legitimate anniversaries happening tomorrow. Like, for instance, the unleash of Gmail happened on April 1st. Everybody thought it was a joke, but it was real.
Who would do that?
Google, apparently.
Well, I mean, maybe that's the answer to why Tesla is doing their press release at 11:30 at night. They said that it was going to be late.
Like, as close to April 1st as possible.
I mean, that would be beyond insane, even for Elon Musk. But they said on their webpage, we'll live stream at 11:30, but Tesla events are notoriously late.
Yeah. And tomorrow is the anniversary of Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak, and Ronald Wayne turning their garage project into an official partnership.
It's all still a terrible joke for Ronald Wayne.
It's not funny for him.
It is not funny at all.
He is probably very tired of people asking him about that particular.
What was his stake? Like 200 G's?
I don't remember.
Got something like painful like that out of the Apple deal. Oh, man, it hurts. Tom, what are you up to? What's going on with you? What's going on in your life, your work life? Tell me about, I always want to say DWTS because I work at ABC, Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, but, yeah. No.
DTNS.
We've got some great former athletes coming on in the next season. Daily Tech News Show, obviously, Monday through Friday. It's me and a different contributor every day, and we bring on guests sometimes talking about the tech news with our own spin. Today, Justin Robert Young and I were talking about Cortana and Alexa and the shaping battle of voice assistants, for instance.
He's not in jail?
Who? Like,
Justin Robert Young. He just seems like one of those crazy people. You never knew what was going to happen. I haven't really been checking
up on him. You haven't seen him on Daily Tech News Show.
No, but
he is a former print journalist from Pittsburgh.
Oh, who am I thinking of? The guy that used to be with Schwood.
Yeah, that's Justin Robert Young.
That's him?
Whole different side.
Whoa.
When you pull the print journalist out of him and put him on the air. So there's that. But also I wanted to mention, if I can, have written a novel and put it up on the Inkshares crowdfunding site. And the way that works is if you get enough people to back it, they'll publish it, and they operate as an actual publisher, not a self-publisher. Like, they do the whole promotions, marketing, editing, the works. So if you look for the novel Pilot X, it's a novel about a time traveler trying to save the universe, and it looks interesting to you, maybe you could pre-order it.
I love it. You are so multifaceted. I love that you love all this sci-fi stuff. It's always been your thing. I think you and Leo, the ones who turned me on to Neal Stephenson. What are you reading right now?
Right now I'm reading V.E. Schwab's A Darker Shade of Magic. It's fantasy, not particular to sci-fi, but I just finished Andrew Main's book, Station Breaker, which is fantastic. And if you like Neal Stephenson and want to mix a little Jason Bourne into it, you're going to like Station Breaker.
Ooh, I'm looking for a page turner because I'm really sick of all the parenting books I'm reading. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, Tom, thank you so much for joining me. It just was like a security blanket of knowing that I got to do this with you, and just such a treat to hear your voice and work with you. You are such a
likewise,
pro.
Becky. I miss you. Let's do it again sooner.
I know. Or Los Angeles. I got to come down and see your pups and your awesome wife. And I will take you up on that offer. Thanks, Tom.
Cool. Thanks, Becky.
Now, Jason's back tomorrow with his co-host from All About Android, Ron Richards, and Floris Ion. It's Ion, right? Is that a real name? That is so cool. To talk about all the news, not just Android or Florence's last name, TNT records live every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be a part of the show. Email tnt@twit.tv. Leave a short voicemail using the phone at 260-TNT-SHOW. You can also find the show on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV. And if you are so inclined, I'm at B. Worley. Thanks, everybody.